Welcome to the mystical world we live in with Almi. This hour, you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almi.
We welcome you to our show. I am Almin, and I have with us today Rohir Shadeh. And he has prepared some questions to ask, and hopefully we can have an entertaining and wonderful hour together. We are very delighted that you've joined us. Rohir, welcome, and thank you.
All right, you're welcome. First question is about the U.S. economy, and this comes from a student, I think, who is really asking about what exactly, technically, so to speak, prompted you to change your mind about what the United States may be sort of facing in terms of the financial situation in the coming times. Change your mind as in it, you seem to be milder now than you in your expectations than you initially were.
Well, there was a very critical point at the beginning of 2008 in January. And although I don't normally give practical advice like that, I did advise, as I did some years ago when I told people that they needed to stock up on some gold. I came sort of out of the woodwork. Normally I work only with the spiritual side of things in communicating to the students. But I did let the email list know that it is always a good idea to have some cash on hand in the house, just so that, you know, if anything does go awry and their banks need to close or whatever, that they have it handy. And I did that because there was a problem. I started to translate the records of a specific library that Mother had instructed me to translate, and when I did so, the prophecies became apparent that there was a series of destructurings that would happen coinciding with certain comets that would arise. And the blue comet, which is the small blue comet that is spoken about in the White Horse libraries, would destructure financial systems. Well, that's Comet Holmes that arrived suddenly in the night sky as we went into another level of life in October of 2007. And then they said that there would be another larger pink one, and there would be a small purple one and a small red one. And I think the purple one comes before the red one, but it was written in the White Horse libraries. And the White Horse libraries had opened in October, and Mother instructed me to translate certain portions of it. So when I found that, I went to the Mother and I said, is there a way that this can be prevented because of the hardship that it will cause? And Mother had said, you hold on to the old, yet you are impatient for the new. Why do you do this? And then I realized that even if the worst we feared in terms of, and I don't like to use those words, but even if the worst that could happen regarding the financial system came about, there were nevertheless loving arms that would carry us up and over it. We just need to, in stillness, listen to our hearts and we will be guided. So I got it, and then I let go of it, and I said, Mother, I understand. And then in January, you know, I got just really concerned about the hardship that would happen if we went, say, for instance, into a full-fledged depression. And at that point, I warned the students to make sure they have some cash on hand to get some liquidity and so on. Then Mother designed a way in which the old can destructure more effortlessly. And again, she did it for a while, but it was not going as planned. So then she tried something else, and yet again, it was that there would be a recreation of life moment by moment. See, if we are not in linear time, we're only living one moment. Which moment is it we want to live? It's a little bit like that movie, Groundhog's Day, with Bill Murray. You know, that's a real fun movie to watch. But as one watches it, you become aware that there's some truth lying in there. So Mother chose as the moment that we continually live over and over, the moment when she first created us, so that things can be recreated, 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 and if we smoothly hang on to only what is before us and should be held on to as being life-enhancing, in other words, if we let go with grace those things don't serve, that this does not have to be that traumatic. So I sent an email to the email list to say this does not have to be traumatic, and it is imperative that light workers with grace let go of things that do not serve in their life, do not hold on to them longer than they need to be held on to. There's a moment for each thing. And if we live with trust and belief in ourselves, we can, by proxy, make the transition more graceful.
Okay, and you said yourself as well that you had to learn something about this attitude of preparing for the worst while expecting the best.
There were two attitude changes I had to go through in a hurry. And attitude change number one, I was living well for myself, but I wasn't living it well when I looked at the big picture. And that is that everybody says they want their lives to change, but they don't want to change themselves. And that is very often the modus operandi of the masses. Please change my life, but please don't make me change. That's not the way that I've lived, but it is the way that I was living when I didn't want society to go into hardship. So it was a matter that if we can change it within, it will change without. That's how it should be done. Then the second part that I had to learn is this issue of preparing for the worst in order to expect the best. If Mother has a plan in place that assures that transitions can be more gracefully done, all we have to do is make sure that that is the case in our own lives. Because the people listening to our words today, Ruchir, are the major light workers of the earth. They are the pivot points upon whose backs the future pivots. And they can change even things like the president by changing things inside.
Okay. Well, speaking of which, and on the subject of the United States, there is a question here about if we should really, if we should really attach any relevance to the kind of media thing that's going on now with the presidential candidates and, who will be it, etc., or if we should just sort of not be too concerned about it.
Well, there are levels that this question should be answered at, because the ascended masters on the earth know that the true government lies in Mother and Father's hands. And there are many mystical secrets behind that some of this I'm not at liberty to disclose in a public setting like this. In classes, it's a different matter. But the point is that the true government on earth, although currently behind the scenes, is Mother and Father. Now you strengthen that which you focus on. So where would we like to focus? If we can trust. Now let's look at this issue of trust and belief. Belief is in self. Belief is that as long as we always do to the highest of our ability, what is our highest choice, the best of our ability, we cannot make mistakes. That which looks like a mistake is sometimes the destructuring of the old for a higher order to come forth. The belief is belief in our own infallibility as long as we walk in total impeccability, and impeccability means you always always choose from the highest. The trust is the trust that Source will not make a mistake either. That mother and father, even though it looks in the short term that there are mistakes made or that things are done in a very, trial and error way in terms of creation, it is never the case. It is true that creation is a work in progress and that will never end, because there is no point in arrival when you deal with evolution of life. However, at the same time, the trial and error was just because it seemed that way from our small vantage point. If we believe that mother and father will not allow mistakes to be made, that is trust. We trust that we're connected to Source, that even if the worst we fear happens, loving arms will carry us up and over as long as we take the self-responsibility to always say, what in myself must I change to change this external scenario?
Okay, but how does that concretely translate to the situation, just to trust? I mean,
well,
in terms
let's
of
summarize
politics.
Number one, again, it is the level of knowledge that one has at the current moment. Many of the masters in my classes go back and forth between the Holy City, which is out of view for most. For them, that's a second home. They're very aware of who's running the government. They pay no attention to it. But for people that don't have that conviction or knowledge, if there is something you do not like, then you change it within. The point of the matter is that no one is what they seem. To look at someone's words and the things that they give you is not the known. It is the unknown. If it is time to vote, forget what your mind heard. Let your heart feel the way. And if you feel repulsed, no matter how well the words are phrased, stay away. But for you to oppose and get on a bandwagon is to think you know. And be careful, because you strengthen that which you oppose, and you also bring about that which you focus on. So make sure what you focus on is what your heart tells you.
All right. Good advice. Okay, next question. You recently, this was for the Belvaspita, which maybe we should explain a bit here, but you said you finally had the sigil, to treat cancer, but it was actually called the sigil of presence, and someone was wondering about, how that would relate to each other, cancer and presence.
Well, I had asked for the cancer sigil, and just so folks know what we're talking about, Belvaspita is a healing modality. There is self-initiation available. The website for Belvaspita, which is spelled B-E-L, V for Victor, A-S-P-A-T-A, is given at the end of our website. And we also have quite a bit of information on Belvaspita on our website itself. Belvaspita is the healing modality given by the mother. It's the most powerful healing modality on earth. I gave it freely to everyone else, not charging for it, because that was what mother instructed me to do. You absolutely can charge for it as a practitioner, because it does not only heal your client, it will do things that will leave the cosmos in your debt. So for you to have it filled with abundance is not a problem. But what I'm trying to say is that in Belvaspita, the sigil for cancer was not given to me, even though I asked for it, starting about May of 2007, until early in 2008. Mother said I did not understand cancer properly. In the beginning of 2008, I started to understand zero-point energy. And it was only when I understood zero-point energy that I understood cancer. How these two relate, we will share with you in just a few minutes, but we'll be off for break.
Albion continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces her readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almeen is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God-being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almeen, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almeen's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Velvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back. And before our commercial break, we were speaking about cancer, and that I had been told before receiving the sigil, which is like a symbol, but it's much more than a symbol. You can read about the difference between symbols and sigils in Journey to the Heart of God and many of the other books. However, the sigil for cancer healing was given by the mother only once I understood about zero-point energy. Zero-point energy is the result of implosions and explosions that happen in the cosmos. If, because opposite light attracts, if opposite light is big enough apart, a black hole forms in that the large light will attract the light of every other being. And so it will start to suck it in, clearing even the building blocks of existence out of the space that it is sucking it in from, so that you end up with a type of vacuum in the cosmos, which is zero-point energy. Nature abhors a vacuum. When there is a vacuum, it will suck building blocks, power, energy from surrounding areas. Cancer, Mother actually got rid of all zero-point energy in the cosmos early in 2008, because she said that it was that which was causing a robbery of power. And so, you know, we had areas in our body, namely the life force center, where zero-point energy existed. And that had to be transfigured in every single being. Cancer is very similar to zero-point energy in that it is that which leaves a vacuum. when there's a vacuum, it sucks and drains from its surrounding area. So let's put that into more practical terms. If one abandons yourself, not living your life fully, it can be said that death comes knocking at your door to remind you that life is precious. Secondly, cancer comes in to fill that vacuum. And the cancer victim abandons him or herself and then depletes not only themselves but their environment by sucking energy from those around it or from areas around it. So now let's look at the cancer. There's a vacuum that forms areas in which one abandons oneself. Then the surrounding area around that area gets its energy and life force and power sucked into that spot, leaving an area with no life in it. The cancer virus then came in to take over that spot. So what Mother said cancer really was, because you must understand that the reality, the indwelling life of hostile viruses and bacteria was in fact removed by Mother late in 2006. So in other words, disease is no longer real in that it no longer has indwelling life. It might still be very uncomfortable, but that is because we allow it to be. The actual abandonment of self, Mother said, is what needs to be dealt with. The presence that needs to be called in is the presence of life force, of power, of energy, of awareness, of light and love and perception and self-perception. Those are what need to be pulled into the area where it is, so that, in other words, the cancer sigil doesn't even deal with the cancer virus. What it deals with is to pull the building blocks of existence into that area. And until I understood that, she wasn't ready to give it to me. Now we have it.
All right. Very good. Next question?
Yes.
Okay. Well, this is a very interesting one. Really asking what is so good about change, if, you know, because you've said that we should embrace it, and why should we, you know, I mean, if it's so uncomfortable, if you would answer that one.
Then, you know, beside the pat answer that is always in front of us, the only constant that doesn't change is the fact that we are the one expressing as the many. That's the only constant. Even the one changes, because every time the many make a decision that is either life-enhancing or not, it changes. So the point is that everything is changing, and so to not embrace it is to oppose life. That's the pat answer. Let's look at the deep metaphysical answer instead. What there is in life is not only change, but also cohesiveness, because everything is going to have its polarity and its opposite. So there is also cohesiveness. Cohesiveness is the equivalent of the pattern of existence that is the best pattern that conformed pursuant to the frequency level. Let me explain what I mean, and we've used this analogy, I think, once before, you and I, when we were on the show together. But what it is if you put the metal shavings on a little cardboard round on the back of a glass, and you use a tuning fork and, you know, make the tuning fork go against the glass, it will make a specific pattern. If you change the tuning fork to another note, it will make a different pattern. We go through vast patterns of existence that hold the relationships or the pattern of the cosmos in place. As we go up to the next note in frequency, that pattern changes to another pattern. In other words, the cohesiveness will hold as long as it can, then it will transfigure to another pattern when frequency changes. And when that happens, enormous amounts of power is released. Now, if somebody chooses to work against their highest knowledge and light, and they in fact change to lower patterns, which is deterioration or degeneration, it will take energy out of the environment. But when life changes our pattern for us, it is in the line of evolution. As long as we only make our highest choices, we're not going to go downwards. It is going to move forwards. So when we embrace this change of pattern that happens in our life, the gift of it is power. Did that make sense?
Yeah, but certainly. But how does what does that concretely mean to say that the gift of it is power?
It means that when we're changing to a higher order, to the next tuning fork up, when that pattern changes, the gift it brings us is the release of power. So in other words, we should embrace change as the vehicle that provides us with power. It's also in the mobility of our life, the fluidity of our life, that the gift of energy comes. The more fluid life is, the more there is energy. The more new experiences we have, the more there is life force. Who would not want those? Consciousness is directly associated with them. But that only happens when we allow that fluidity, either one pattern changing to another, or the fluidity within the pattern to actually happen.
All right. Should we go on to the next one?
Yes.
Okay. Well, this is a question about, really asking about how come there is still a lot of these sort of, Caribbean or African religions around where, we have a lot of deity pantheons and, where the gods come down and there's possession and everything and stuff like communication when technically all those gods should be gone by now.
Now, I'm not entirely sure what you mean by possession, so if I can exclude that for a moment and just deal with the others.
Mm-hmm.
There are ancient remnants left of mother religions and the original religion of father. Now, religion is not what it means today, because today religion tells one in many instances how to live. This is what you may do, this is what you may not do. The original guidance systems that were developed were in fact revelations of the laws of the cosmos and to show you how to work within those laws of the cosmos. And also where certain sacred information had to be preserved, there were in fact gods and goddesses formed by mother and father prior to the descent into forgetfulness that we as a cosmos have been through, and the history of that is written in The Gift of the Unicorns. So what I'm trying to say is the goddesses and gods were truly there. They represented either archetypal portions of mind or feeling, or they represented certain principles of the cosmos that mother and father wanted to make sure did not get forgotten. Some of the African religions And the one you are referring to is called what? Are you referring to a specific one?
No, I'm not referring to a specific one, although I think the question is... I think the question has specifically the sort of, you know, Afro-Caribbean in mind, because they're still, you know, the most potent ones, but I think it would sort of cover any kind of sort of, I mean, it may be a bit too generalized, but any kind of, you know, magical/religious system which invokes deities. But I think the question is specifically, you know, having the more potent, like, African magical systems in mind, so to speak.
The African, there are ancient African religions, specifically the ones that deal with the Orishas that went into the Western Indies, that are some of the oldest fragments.
In the Western Indies?
West Indies?
The Caribbean. That one.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the point of the matter is that that father himself began the Orisha religion, but it has deteriorated over eons of existence. That was done long, long, long ago in order to preserve certain principles, literally eons of life ago. And father himself instigated that one. Then there are fragments left of goddess religions that mother herself put in place to help during the times of the de-evolution that the cosmos went through, the descension, to help preserve certain principles. But what you're finding there are ancient remnants. Some of those gods exist still as part of the kingdom of the gods, which we describe in Secrets of the Hidden Realms, and some have become corrupt and have become replaced. Some of the principles they practice is corrupt and some are not. And that's because of simply eons of, you know, erosion.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's very interesting. Okay. Should we go into the next one?
Yes, we've got time for one more, and then we'll take a quick break.
All right, well, here's a nice, simple one, which I think lots of people will appreciate. What's the point, if any, of exercise, physical exercise?
It depends, again, whether one is in immortality or in mortality. In immortality, a lot of what you do is by proxy. For example, in immortality, you don't have to go to the bathroom. You don't have to eat. You don't have to exercise to be a specific weight. The immortal masters in my classes can attest to all of that. However, you may choose to eat because you like to. You may choose to exercise because you like to. The assimilation of food and whether you choose to excrete it or to turn it to light. Again, a lot of what immortal masters do, they either do because it makes their heart sing or they do because it's by proxy. Their bodies become very pure, but they could nevertheless, by proxy, detoxify something if there is something on behalf of the cosmos that needs to be cleared. So they start to live by as archetypes for the cosmos. And I've explained why that is in Journey to the Heart of God. However, if you are in immortality, that's different, but in mortality, exercise keeps the flow of the physical, and because the physical particles have been joined with an etheric counterpart, they were in fact metamorphosed by Mother in March of 2008. And because of this, it also helps keep the energetic channels freely flowing. It's got many benefits.
But in immortality, it wouldn't have those benefits?
No, it wouldn't.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting, because I still thought, yeah.
In immortality, if you wish it to flow, you live more of an inner life. You can do it through inner work. So it doesn't have to be done through the outer work.
Well, I was actually also just thinking about it in terms of my own situation where I don't really sort of, you know, really would have liked to have done it more in the past months, but somehow had the idea that it was, you know, a waste of time, and now I'm uncovering that it's actually sort of good for me, so I'm kind of glad because now I can sort of just go out and do it rather than sort of think, you know, I'm wasting my time and I should be doing this in another way.
An example of how Mother brought this home to me, in September of 2006, she put me in a position where for 8 or 9 days I could not shower nor bathe. And, you know, I love my bath. In fact, I love a bath twice a day. So the point is that she was trying to show me something. Once a day, my body would excrete pure water. It wasn't sweat. It was pure water, drenching me like an inner shower. So once a day, my body would bathe itself totally from head to toe, excreting so much water that I had to use a towel to dry myself off. I bathed myself. And she said, no, you really don't even need to bathe. But if you want to bathe, it can come from within. And this went on for 9 days.
Okay. But still, you would probably prefer to just take a bath.
Yes, because I love it.
Okay.
And I think it was in January of 2008 that I didn't eat for several weeks, didn't lose any weight. You know, and then I can also eat what I want. It's not depending any longer on that which is corruptible when the body becomes incorruptible.
Okay. So the criteria should really be, you know, just going back to exercise, if you think it's fun, then you should sort of go out and do it.
Yes, and now let's say somebody wants to get toned. How can exercise help an immortal get toned? How it helps them get toned is that during that time, they focus on it. In August of 2005, for several weeks, Mother sent me on tasks in the etheric realms that were intensely physical. Actually, it was like 2 months, and my body got so toned because I was focusing on this highly physical activity.
Okay. What was that?
Well, we'll just continue and hope it doesn't happen again. It will get toned if you exercise simply because you're thinking of it. But
right.
It's not the exercise.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
And Ruhir, why don't we take a quick break?
All right.
After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almin experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book has been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master and in addition continue to function among the masses. but as a Toltec Nahual and seer, Almi's life was dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the Heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the Heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almi's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Almeen at www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back to our listening audience. We are delighted that you've joined us, and we are going right back to our questions. Rogier, what would you like us to look at next?
I would like to look at the perennial question of light workers and money, and really how we should relate to the let's say the energy or concept of prosperity.
Yes, and there are actually a couple of areas when we look at money that should be addressed. Number one that should be addressed is that when something is desired, that is quite fine, because desire moves life. It makes things happen. It makes flow come in. It pushes things forward. Desire is actually very much underrated by spiritual traditions. Desire is the foundation of emotion. And I've created a CD, The Power of Emotion, in which I explain how vital emotion is to help us not get stagnant along the path of evolution. So if we desire money or things that money can buy, that's fine. But when our well-being depends on it, then it's no longer a desire. Then it becomes a need. So the first thing in getting our financial life in order is to clean up our thinking that it takes money for us to have fun, that it takes money for us to have a good time, that money is needed to keep our wardrobe up to date each fashionable season and that sort of thing. There is much less needed than we suppose. And if we really saw clearly, we would realize that our being is our sustenance and there is no need at all. However, it begins by teaching our children and in our own lives, living away. Entertainment is a foot of grass in your backyard. If you take a foot of grass in your backyard and a magnifying glass, you will notice that there are sub-layers of social life going on in the insect world, in the root system, in the lower stems, in the upper stems, and so forth. There is so much to study. If we are inquisitive about the miraculous world that has been created for us by the infinite, entertainment is everywhere. We don't need to live in a big city to have entertainment or have museums or clubs or this or that to belong to. It's out in nature. If we reduce our needs down, the flow of abundance comes to us far more readily. Neediness depletes. So that's principle number one. Principle number two is that we cannot, with money, benefit at the cost of something else. I do not stress, the issue of recycling every single thing and only using this or that because it's earth-friendly. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, one master can clean up an entire garbage heap. Mother has been doing this. She's been giving us assignments to do it. If people out there had any idea the work that Mother has done to keep this planet healthy and pristine enough, but not take our learning experiences away from us, yet she has done the damage control necessary. It can be cleaned up by Mother in an afternoon. Masters everywhere can clean it up. But then the world will have learned nothing. They will have not learned how precious she is. However, if you are going to buy something that has indestructible material that for the next 2,000 years is not going to be destructured, consider that not like an obsession, because no matter how long something is there, Mother can dissolve it in an instant. But consider it as you buy, how friendly it is to the rest of life. So that's the second thing. Because if we benefit at the cost of something else, ultimately we'll pay somewhere else. So that impedes abundance. If we take a look at the third thing, and we've discussed this one on our shows before, the love-hate relationship that people have with money when they are spiritual is the same love-hate relationship that people that are concerned over getting every ounce of nutrition from their food possible has with food. It is there for your freedom and to enjoy. And the freedom is simply the freedom to travel, the freedom to go to the movie if you want to. It brings freedom of experiences in that it adds in more experiences. Honor and love and respect it for that. Because somehow light workers have this feeling that it's tainted, so they have this love-hate relationship with money, so they end up without it and then wonder why. Because life should be blessing their spiritual endeavors. But it will, but not with money, if you resent money. So money is not to be viewed as the filthy lucre that we think it is. It simply is crystallized power until we can bring life to the next level in which we truly can manifest with thought that which we need. So it is crystallized power. So changing our attitude is very important. Then, the last thing that we need to look at. We empower that which we focus on. So if we think of money, what is it that we wish to empower? Money's grip over people as a means of freedom? No. That which it represents. That which is behind the appearances. If money stands for crystallized power, it is the self-empowering of the individual, self-empowering of ourselves, that we want to focus on. Let's say we give the beggar the dollar in the street. We give the beggar the dollar, but we don't focus on the dollar and think, what is he going to buy with it? We say by proxy to ourselves, by proxy, I allow him to see his inner power. I am empowering him as an individual, as a unique expression of the divine. So in other words, we focus on that which is behind it. If we have to pay our taxes, when we send that check, we say, I empower the beautiful parks. You see schools arise from your check. You see healthy, happy children with enough daycare. You see elderly being taken care of. Even though it may not happen with your tax dollars, that is what you're empowering, and so eventually it must. So we look at what's behind the principle. Does that help?
Yeah, I think it helps, but does this not tie into the what we discussed earlier in the show about the releasing of power and by shifting the patterns?
Yes, it does. And what we'll do, let's take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we'll tell you how to bring in money in the form of crystallized power by shifting patterns. Thank you, Rukhir. Good thing you reminded me.
Okay.
The brand new book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is now available from Almeen. The magical book answers a question: do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today. The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Keys series of radio programs are a part of the Premier CD set. They are available from Almeen at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today.
Welcome back. We have only about 5 minutes left of our show, and Rukhir has brought up a very good point. We have said that money is crystallized power. Earlier in the show, we said that power is released when our patterns change to create a new pattern of a higher order. How can we utilize this principle to release more money in our life? Well, let's take the simpler way. We have always said that when we go around our house, tidying out the old, throwing out those magazines in which you have one article you've meant to read for the past 6 years, but you know that you will possibly never get to because there's about 300 others that you feel the same about. If you have all of those carted off to the recycling bin or the books to the library or whatever it is you can do to make use of your resource into a new order, cleaning out your house brings in new energy and money. Giving away things that are old that can be of use to others brings in increased flow. That's the simpler side of it. On the more complex side of it, everything changes without when you change within. If within you are impoverished, my beloved brothers and sisters, in that within you are not allowing yourself enough time to do the things that make your heart sing. If you do not allow yourself enough time to nourish the self, to nourish the artistic, to nourish your body, to pamper your body, if you are impoverished in the areas that enforce a life of abundant living in other aspects, you cannot expect money to flow into you in increased amounts because that pattern has to change. If you change to an abundant life within, an abundant life within does not mean a shopping spree. It means that you truly take time to sit on the beach and look at the little tiny crystals of sand in your hand. That you truly take time to look at the shapes of the pebbles in your backyard. Take time to express and spend meaningful time with loved ones, with your children. This is a higher pattern, and this must release energy to you, and energy in the form of crystallized power as well, which is money. My beloved brothers and sisters, thank you for joining us at this time, and we hope you have enjoyed our show. We are always happy to have you with us, so we hope to join us. You will join us again next week for this hour. Thank you.
The brand new book, The Gift of the Unicorns, is now available from Almeen. The magical book answers the question, do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today. In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almeen's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Elvispada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, Windows into Eternity with Almeen. Please join us again next week.